come together.
Thanks for listening to the KC Morning Show.
Here is the startling reality that almost nobody talks about. You know, you talk about why people are angry out there. All right? They have a reason to be angry. And the reason is that right now, real inflation accounted for wages, real dollars, over the last 50 years. Today, that average American worker is earning less than he or she did 50 years ago. So what happened? How did that happen? Well, I'll tell you what happened. It was a study done by the RAND Corporation, kind of conservative think tank. And what they looked at in terms of income and wealth inequality is that over that same 50-year period, there has been a $50 trillion transfer of wealth from the bottom 90% to the top 1%. Now, $50 trillion is an unfathomable number. What the hell does that mean? It's beyond anyone's comprehension. But the bottom line is that what's happened is over the last 50 years, as workers have become more productive, producing more, they have not benefited from it. Almost all of that increase in wealth has gone to the people on top. So the reality of the economy today is that for the people on top, for the 1%, they have never, ever had it so good in American history. Top 1% never had it so good, making money hand over fist. And it's not only income and wealth inequality. It's not only that three people, if you can believe this, own more wealth than the bottom half of American society. What do you think about that? Is that what America's supposed to be?
On January 11th, 1970, victory belonged to Hank Stram and his Kansas City Chiefs.
TV9 News Special Report. Close up, the flood of 77.
From the Kemper Arena in Kansas City, Missouri, it's Milwaukee Bucks against the Kansas City Kings.
Now Kansas Cityans must decide what happens next. What is to follow the city's Holy Week riots?
I am here at the American Royal World Series of Barbecue.
Daryl Motley awaits, and the Kansas City Royals are world champions.
Sir Harvey K, my brother, he is the good professor emeritus over at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. My brothers, my sisters, my comrades, every Tuesday, y'all know what we do. We take back America, reclaiming that radical, progressive history. Professor Harvey J. K. he's been reclaiming this history since day one. Time to put on the cape and take back America. Professor K, how are you, brother?
Well, I've missed that opening goal, so to speak.
Longing makes the radical yelling more fonder, right?
Now, everyone will realize probably that we've been on some hiatus. We've had a hiatus for much too long. I don't even want to count how long that is.
Too long.
Okay. And I have a feeling that if we had not gone on hiatus, the Democrats would have won this past November.
This is on us.
It's on us. Yeah. And I do want to talk about the election. Pretend we're in a cocktail party and we'll talk about why the Democrats did lose, or at least Harris lost. But before we do that, we haven't talked football in a long time. Okay, which, shame on us. For a start, I do congratulate you on yet another amazing year for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, it's amazing to me how it will look along the way like the Chiefs are as capable of losing as any team. And then all of a sudden, bam, you know, it's like you wait for that moment that he comes out bouncing, Mahomes, bouncing, right? I can't remember who we play anymore on Sunday, but whatever it is, you know who I'll be rooting for. It goes without saying, Green Bay Packers.
And then once Green Bay pulls home that win, we'll have some cider and we'll do a virtual cheers as we take back America. How about that, Harvey K?
That sounds good. Sounds very good. By the way, taking back America became all the more of a challenge in light of November. We should talk a little bit about...
Let's do it.
What the f*** happened? Can I say that?
It's the only word to say.
Let's do this. Let's pretend we're at a cocktail party. How's this?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I see you and I say, hey... What do you make of this? I mean, where do we go wrong? I mean, by the way, we go wrong with the Democrats most of the time, but that's not the issue. The issue is, where do we go wrong in terms of this particular election? I mean, I'll be honest. I've voted for Democrats ever since 19, 84. I generally have the practice. Generally, I hold my nose and I vote because the opposition is just so abysmal that you couldn't even possibly entertain it. But having said that, people have said to me at a bar and other places, gee, how did this happen? How does it turn out this way? And I said, well, how far back do you want me to go? Let's talk backwards. Let's start with the fact that the Harris campaign moved to the center. They didn't even go as far left as the Biden campaign would have gone. I mean, they didn't. And I worried when I heard that she was bringing her brother-in-law in as a major advisor on the campaign. In case people don't know, he has long been the lawyer to Uber, the guys who fought recognizing Uber drivers as employees so they could organize and gain the benefits they'd be entitled to, etc. And then I read just the other day that early on in the campaign, there had been talk of going to the left, at least regarding the billionaires and the corporate bosses, but her advisors said, no, we can't do that. And then they shifted and decided they were going to try to win fans of Liz Cheney.
Immediate thoughts when you saw that. I mean, why the hell she brought on Mark Cuban after talking about price gouging, and now you're stumping with the Shark Tank?
Having Liz Cheney by her side at any given moment, that didn't shock me at first, because what shocked me was that her father, Vice President Cheney, a.k.a. Darth Vader, okay, was going to vote for her, as if that was this major victory. God, I mean, holy cow, unbelievable. But here's the other question. Would they have won otherwise? I mean, keep in mind, in that sense, let's go back to the convention and all the vibes. I hate that word, by the way. And all the vibes coming out of the convention and the joy. Undeniably, there was joy. But I don't know how far outside of the convention hall the joy was felt.
Harvey, I was there at the convention center. The tone deaf of it all, as you're talking about going after billionaires, when I'm looking at the very top of the venue of all those suites where at least the price was what, $250,000, $500,000 just to get a spot? I mean, just the disconnect.
And not to mention, they put Bernie, was Bernie on the second night or the
The first night. Wanted to just get him out of the way.
Yeah, and he was so optimistic, and I thought to myself, okay, this is good. Bernie's my guy. Let's see what happens. And then it was like it just went away. The only interesting voice after that, Sean Fain was inadequate to the occasion. He's not inadequate to the organizing occasions, but he was not adequate to that night, I felt. Right. I almost wish they had brought O'Brien in, the Teamsters president. Let him throw a challenge out to the Democrats, and let him also maybe, he wouldn't have apologized for having hugged and kissed the ring of Trump and the tushy of Vance.
Another huge problem with this party. O'Brien, he spoke at the RNC, and I think that was a bit of an own goal. I think a little bit of ego was involved, but also the working class also includes folks who maybe think that they align with the Republican Party. But here's the problem with the Democrats is that because O'Brien spoke at the RNC, they think their big ha-ha, F you, flip you off is to not invite him to even speak. Who are you campaigning to? Is it a bunch of donors who want to giggle because they can say they owned O'Brien?
Yeah.
That's not how you win elections. Sorry,
let me be clear. I think the Walls selection, that was a good selection. In his speech to the convention, he said something which was so promising. I bet people didn't notice it. He referred to health and housing as rights.
That's how we'll keep moving forward. That's how we'll turn the page on Donald Trump. That's how we'll build a country where workers come first. Healthcare and housing are human rights. And the government stays the hell out of your bedroom.
I texted you. You remember?
Yeah, I mean, that seriously. And I thought, okay, now we're on to something. But you know what? By the time he went to the debate with Vance, they had, I was going to use a metaphor. I won't do that.
I've been saying muzzled.
Okay, muzzled. I had an image from the other part of the body. But anyhow, they had muzzled him. I mean, they literally had shut him down. The look on his face the whole time was that of like, I got to go to the bathroom. And then Vance tried to be sweet. He fell right into the trap. That Minnesota nice was like oozing out of every one of his pores. And I thought, take this guy down.
Whatever happened to weird Harvey?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, God. Anyhow, so that worried me a lot. Not because I thought otherwise of him. It's because he got marching orders. Just be nice. Minnesota nice, right? Let's go back further. Yeah, Biden did them a favor. He pulled out so that nobody else could get in to challenge Harris. But let's remember something. Harris was a loser in 2020.
She dropped out before she even made it to her home state's primary.
Really bad. Really bad. She, like others, probably were part of the ganging up on Bernie, which didn't, you know, smell right to me ever.
And I hope folks go back and look. I mean, it's crazy how much she did the exact same trajectory. She had that moment against Biden at the debate, and all of a sudden that next week she soars, and then she pretends like she never was a co-sponsor for Medicare for All.
Yeah, right. I was even amazed that Biden had brought her on as the VP, because word was out that she had basically stuck a knife in his back, as Warren was about to do to Bernie up on that debate stage. God, you know? Then we go back before the way in which the boys and girls of the Democratic Party shoved Harris in as the candidate. No questions asked. Here's our candidate, right? Now we have to ask ourselves, was Biden so antagonized by fellow Democrats that he refused a year ago to say, as I've hinted at, I'm not running for re-election? Let there be an open set of debates. Now, some people say debates would end up sort of weakening the Democratic Party, but on the contrary, let the debate take place, and then perhaps they would have had included Dean Phillips, Marianne Williamson, the people who might actually challenge the status quo to some extent, especially in Marianne's case, if people could hear her. Whoever would emerge as the candidate, and maybe it would have been Harris, who knows, would have been a candidate who would have heard the things that people would respond to and might have made those things part of her own campaign. The campaign itself was utterly bizarre as she tried to, I mean, when she announced that she was going to, what, weaken the restrictions on Bitcoin, and the word was this was supposedly to appeal to young and middle-aged black men who are more involved in Bitcoin. I'm talking about patronizing bullshit.
That's who donated to the Harris-Walls campaign.
Yeah, well, to both campaigns, but you're right. Absolutely right. Then we can go back further. That the Democratic Party had basically turned their backs on working people in all their diversity in the late 1970s, and possibly before then, if you allow me to tell a story eventually. And that is, especially around 1978, Jimmy Carter was president. And Jimmy Carter, who had been enabled to the presidency by the environmental movement and the labor movement. Jimmy Carter, he had only so much political capital, he figured. Essentially, he didn't go with the environmentalists. He didn't go with the labor movement. Didn't go with the consumer movement, the folks who backed him. He decided he was going to spend his political capital returning the Panama Canal to Panama, which, by the way, is very nice. But the Colombians might have said, well, if you're really going to return it to anyone, give us back Panama, which you supported the creation of, because we wouldn't let you do what you wanted to at the price you wanted to do it. What happens? He turns his back, and the bill that was coming up in Congress that would have changed the Taft-Hartley Act, this is 1978, he was not going to push it through.
And real quick, Harvey, explain for folks who are listening, Taft-Hartley.
Taft-Hartley was passed in 1947 by Republicans. After World War II, the Democratic Party basically had been in office for some time with Franklin Roosevelt, who died in 1945. And Truman became president. And Truman probably wasn't fully up to the job yet. In the elections of 1946, the Republicans won both houses of Congress. And they quickly moved to try to turn back the clock on the FDR years of the New Deal and other things. And so they targeted, and they went did exactly what they would end up doing in the 1970s. They targeted the labor movement, because if you can weaken labor, you weaken the Democratic Party. By the way, the intimate connection between the labor movement and the Democratic Party is in good part a consequence of the Roosevelt years. And in Taft-Hartley, that law allowed for right-to-work states, essentially. It made it very difficult for the labor movement to organize in the South. Now, you could say, well, okay, they didn't organize the South, but think of the consequences. Not only did they not organize the South, which basically left capital and the white supremacists in power, it also meant that they couldn't organize African Americans in the labor movement, because there were industries in which there was African American labor, especially. So it really left Southern workers at the mercy of these big well-funded drives to create right-to-work states, which they did. It also, they had this thing about your union could not be headed by a member of the Communist Party. Okay, that's all part of the emerging Cold War. But the point is, what they really want to do is they want to drive out all of the leftists from labor and otherwise. So in essence, you know, whether you were a member of the party in the 30s or the 40s, they were targeting you. And the same thing happened in some ways in the civil rights movement, by the way. So Taft-Hartley had this clause in it that basically empowered right to work and really hampered labor union organizing. And both the AFL and the CIO, separate federations at that time, tried to seriously to organize in the South. It was called Operation Dixie, the CIO. And they invested, they sent organizers down, and man, they had a response from workers, but they had a brick wall when it came to the local authorities and the bosses in those factories and plants. Okay, so that's Taft-Hartley. So in 78, the idea was to get this law passed. I mean, it's about time we change labor law. And under Carter, capitalists were really well organized in the 70s. First, they wanted to turn back the legacy of the 60s and the Great Society, environmental laws, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? Because they hated OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health, hated the EPA. They were all out. They were also going to do their damnedest to go after the 1930s changes. He turned his back on the labor movement, Carter. And the president of the UAW, who was serving on the President's Commission on Labor and Management, was, I think, known as the Dunlop Commission, something like that. When that happened, when the word came down that they were not going to change the law, even folks in Congress were being bought off, in quotes, by the corporate bosses. And the corporate bosses mobilized. Their Learjets flew them in to Washington to lobby. There was a picture of these Learjets lined up. It probably looked like Aspen, Colorado with the Learjets lined up. This guy, Doug Frazier, head of the UAW, he said, then I'm out. And in fact, I want to read to people what he said. I want to read his letter. It was a public letter. Repeatedly, Carter would give way or fail to fight. And repeatedly, congressional Democrats would fall apart in the face of corporate pressures and inducements, aka corruption. And by the way, I'm reading from a paragraph in my book, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. UAW President Douglas Frazier, a World War II Army veteran whose union activities began in the 1930s, expressed the thoughts of most people in labor and on the left when he quit the president's labor management advisory group following the filibuster defeat of the labor law reform bill in July 1978, essentially delivering the eulogy for the liberal consensus, that is the prevailing consensus of liberal politics and social change. Frazier explained in his resignation letter why he could no longer cooperate with the corporate elite. Listen to this. I believe leaders of the business community have chosen to wage a one-sided class war today in this country, a war against working people, the unemployed, the poor, the minorities, the very young and the very old, and even many in the middle class of our society. That is one of the most prophetic statements imaginable. The class war had already begun. But that was the moment in which a Democratic president literally put up his hands and said, go get him, meaning he was going to allow capital to rule the day. Jimmy Carter is the first truly neoliberal president, okay? Paved the way for Reagan.
Most folks, Professor K, love to say that it was Reagan first, so...
Reagan might well have never been elected if Carter had pursued the initiatives of the environment, consumer groups, and labor that had placed him in office to begin with. Mm. Millions of people stayed home. Talk about history repeating itself. I do believe Harris lost a lot of votes that didn't necessarily even go to the Republicans. They just sat on their hands, people. So one could go back to that moment. One could also go back to earlier moments. I just want to tell people that the Democratic Party is now sort of agonizing over what do we do? It's amazing. There's this whole cohort of Democratic consultants and Clintonites and Bidenites who are saying, damn, we ran a good campaign. Laughable.
What a bunch of losers.
A bunch of losers. And who suffers? Not them. They made lots and lots of money advising Democratic candidates. And by the way, there were Democratic candidates who won, who pursued a different kind of politics and a different kind of agenda. Look, it remains the case that, go back several years, in Florida, when DeSantis is ruling the roost, they voted to have a $15 an hour minimum wage. In Kansas, where people kept saying, what's the matter with Kansas? They voted to protect a woman's right to choose. In Missouri, tell them what happened in Missouri.
We voted to not only raise the minimum wage, but to also codify abortion into the Constitution. The through line, the radical spirit, that's just American. That's not red. That's not blue. That's day one, who we are.
Exactly. So, you know, it isn't the fault of Harris. It isn't the fault of even Biden. However, in the immediate sense, they're responsible. It's also the case that the Democrats a long time ago turned their back on a capital P, capital R, capital O, capital G, capital R, capital E, capital S, I, V, E. You got the picture, okay? Looking at the word on the wall, trying to make sure I spelled it right. But they didn't go for the progressive. Better, let me rephrase it, because that word progressive is, no offense, I have to admit, and I know you're active with the Young Progressive Democrats of America. I've been active with the Progressive Democrats of America. That is a worn-out word. You know, once upon a time, liberal was the key word, and everyone thought, no. Well, the word progressive is also rather worn out. It will work for us, but the more important understanding should be social democracy.
That's it.
Okay? That's what we need to be pursuing, those of us who are on the left, whether we're fighting liberals or progressives or radicals or outright socialists, social democracy. So I have some ideas for what the Democratic Party needs to do. I wrote this note to myself, and I've tweeted it a couple of times. Hey, Dems, you want to win? One, invite labor back in. Now, I got to tell a story again. This is going to upset some other people. They'll say, God, how could he badmouth Jimmy Carter? I'm not badmouthing Jimmy Carter, who was active with Habitat for Humanity. I'm talking about President Jimmy Carter. I'm not talking about him as an evil character or anything else, but it's McGovern who is somewhat responsible for the debacle that labor and the Democratic Party has walked into. Back in 1966, not 78 now, go back to 66, there was an effort to transform labor law. Now, this is also in part, I think, Johnson's fault, Lyndon Johnson's fault. When Lyndon Johnson became president, and he was more progressive than Kennedy, let me be very clear about that. When he became president, he met with George Meany and Walter Reuther, and he made it clear, because they were asking him, time to end the Taft-Hartley Act, overthrow Taft-Hartley in Congress. And he said, look, I have a series of initiatives that I want to pursue. One of them had to do with civil rights. And yes, that's what he said, civil rights and voting rights, basically that combination. And then he wanted to get the Great Society War on Poverty going, okay, equal opportunity type stuff. I mean, he laid them out. And there were these other initiatives that the Democrats were going to pursue regarding the environment and so on. And he told Meany and Reuther, he said, look, let's get these things passed and then we do labor law reform. And they bowed to his demand. In one part, it's very essential because Walter Reuther was really, really important when it came to creating the March on Washington, because the UAW helped underwrite the bus. The buses brought all those people into the city, and he was very close to Randolph in any case. So the law confronted a filibuster. Now, keep in mind, Johnson was famous for breaking filibusters. He knew how to break your arm if you didn't vote the way he wanted you to. And then what happens? I think this was the one filibuster he didn't break, the filibuster on labor law reform. So it's in filibuster. George McGovern is in the U.S. Senate from South Dakota. South Dakota was already a right-to-work state, but if you transform the law, then labor could go after these right-to-work states. And McGovern didn't want to jeopardize his political career, I suppose. He voted against ending the filibuster. Now, George Meany, the head of the AFL-CIO, there was no way he was going to forget that. And then George McGovern goes on to head up what's called the McGovern Commission, which was a commission to diversify the Democratic Party ranks and base. Now, they already were the party, despite the Southern Democrats, they were the party that pushed civil rights through with Northern Republican and Western Republican support. However, this commission was created in the wake of the Chicago debacle of the convention, in order to increase the voices in the party from people of color, especially African Americans and women. In itself, a magnificent ambition, and the commission actually prevailed in their report and their recommendations. However, doing that weakened the voice of labor as an organized force in the Democratic Party. The irony and the tragedy is that even as labor is finally becoming all the more, in quotes, integrated, you've got this thing which is pushing against the labor movement. And Meany, we get to 1972 and the convention that nominates McGovern. Meany, he's already pissed because it's McGovern, on top of which labor has less capacity to influence the outcome and maybe shape the agenda as well. And he walks out with the AFL-CIO delegation.
Wow.
And that's the beginnings in some ways of this split. But that's not what led the Democratic Party into the kinds of tragic mistakes it continued to make. So that over and over again, the Democrats essentially, if they didn't turn their backs completely on labor, they didn't fight for labor and for working people. So I say, one, invite labor back in, keeping in mind this, the most diverse, and I mean diversity in all its senses, organized force in American public life right now, as weak as it may be compared to the past, is the labor movement. All you got to do is turn on the TV if there's a strike in the local area. Look who's on the line. Two, call out the corporate elite and billionaires and the politicians who pursued their ambitions. Hell, they were the folks who pursued the one-sided class war, or what I call class war from above, and neoliberalism versus the democratic achievements of the 1930s to the 1960s. And everybody essentially remembers it and knows it. Now, they can't tell you the history, but we all know, if you can't see it when Elon Musk is standing alongside of Trump, if you can't see it with the Democratic Party and the folks who, as Hartzell was talking about, were sitting up, not in the bleachers, but sitting up in the boxes. I mean, come on. Just today I saw this, the AFL-CIO issued this report about the fact that, you know, as much as labor's on the march to some extent again, the fact is corporate bosses' salaries and benefits are skyrocketing all the more. So much for the impact of the Biden years that, yeah, undeniably better than we expected, but sure as hell, nothing will fundamentally change. He told us, and there you go. Number three, start thinking FDR. Project a vision of an economic bill of rights for all Americans. I saw some of your writing this week, Hartzell. First and foremost, would guarantee all Americans health care. Period. No questions asked. Guarantee Americans health care. Okay, we are backward on health care. And look, I don't want to get into the question of the assassination of the head of United Healthcare, but let's face it, the anger that's being exhibited right now, the people who are shouting, oh, that's driven by the fact that those folks who head up these big healthcare enterprises, they're making billions, and there are innumerable Americans who are dying for lack of adequate healthcare. I mean, this is ridiculous. And moreover, start exuding confidence, because the polls then and now, meaning back in the 1940s and now, show that Americans want an economic bill of rights. Fourth, choose candidates who don't simply promise to fight for us, but actually inspire the fight in us. And don't fail to engage working people in the fight and the ensuing changes and initiatives pursued. Let me make something clear. My wife said, do you really want to use the word fight? Doesn't that sound like January 6th kind of shit? And I said, no, I'm not talking about that. There's a big difference between a political fight, or as Bernie talked about, the political revolution, versus storming the Capitol building with pitchforks and flagpoles with arrows at the tip kind of stuff. I'm talking about joining the fight, or as Bernie used to say, not me, us. Not me, us. So there you go. That's my prescription for the Democratic Party. You think anyone will listen?
Well, if they want to start winning, they better start listening, Harvey K. And I think my biggest takeaway, the stat that I just can't get over, I've talked about it already on this show. Trump won folks making less than $100,000, and Kamala won the folks making more.
To have driven people of little means into the arms of Trump and Musk and the reactionaries in Congress. Oh, my God. You know, if it wasn't my country, I could laugh.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on? You know, this is like Bizarro Land in Superman comics.
The fight has to continue. You know, when we say we have to take back America, yeah, yes. It sounds great on the logo, but also that's what we're in, folks. We were set back a couple of weeks ago, and there is a lot of folks who I've seen, you know, we're down bad. But you know what? Maybe just because you and I, we have organized in the past with our unions, You can't stew in the cynicism. It's time to get back to work.
And the fight right now, let's be clear, you're organizing through YPDA and your tenants association. For me, the fight is to try to reach as many ears and minds to try to get people to talk to folks and promote the idea of how to take back the Democratic Party and thus take back America.
Professor Harvey J.K., my dear, dear professor and brother, where can folks find you on the internets?
Okay, so I'm still in there at Twitter, RVJK, H-A-R-V-E-Y, initial J-K-Y. In fact, people said, are you sticking it out there? And I said, yeah, I'm sticking it out there. I mean, there are still people out there like me. Okay, I don't want to abandon them.
I'm staying in the race.
But it's also the case, I got to know the crap that these other folks are spewing. Okay, oh, disgust. Okay, but I'm also on Blue Sky. Those addresses are a bit long. At harveyjk.bsky.social.
And you can get me at HeartSoul965. You can get the KC Morning Show at The KC Morning Show on Instagram, and then just KC Morning Show on Twitter. I get this, Harvey K. Now, I was an early adapter to this Blue Sky, so I got the first name. It's just HeartSoul.bsky.social. I've never felt more elitist, I'll be honest. I feel very important.
Then I can tell you, I've always felt elitist in the sense that there are Harvey K's out there on Twitter, maybe even on Blue Sky, but there's only one Harvey J-K-A-Y-E.
Give these folks some radical pump-ups. You know what? Give them something that lets them know that Harvey J.K., the professor emeritus at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, that you are going to walk with us and empower us as we continue to take back America in what will be some of the most important trying times of our life.
Okay, well, first of all, we're coming back on with a regular schedule sooner rather than later, I hope, with this show. Also, if any of you are interested, at commondreams.com, is that, or .org? I can't remember.
.org.
If you type in Common Dreams, it'll come up, .org. I've been doing a series of comics with a man named Matt Strackbine. He goes by The Letter Hack. Okay, if you just type that in, you'll see a series of comics. And we've got one right now that we're putting together. These aren't big things. I mean, the original one was 11 pages, and we've done a couple of short ones. This one is going to be like 3 pages in which we get at the questions that Hartzell and I are talking about this divide between the Democrats and working people. And maybe for a start, the Democrats ought to start listening. It's as if they truly didn't only turn their backs, they shut their ears to what working people aspire to, want, need. As well, look, all I can say is I belong to a labor union in retirement. I urge everyone, if there's a labor union where you work, join it. If there's talk of an organizing one, participate in doing so. If there isn't, talk to people. See what the mood is. This is the last thing for the protection of good people. Make sure you are part of some kind of organization. Don't be standing out on your own. That's my advice.
Whoa! My brother, I love you. We're going to chat soon. We're going to get this schedule put together, and we're going to keep taking back America.
Always great, Hartzell. I'll give you hugs from the Zoom.
I've been waiting on the sunset, bills on my mindset. I can't deny it, getting higher than my income. Income's breadcrumbs. I've been trying to survive. The glow that the sun gets right around sunset helps me realize that this is just a journey. Drop your worries. You are gonna turn out fine. Oh, you turn out fine. Oh, you turn out fine. But you gotta keep your head up, oh. And you can let your head down, hey. You gotta keep your head up, oh. And you can let your head down, hey. I know it's hard, no, it's hard to remember sometimes. But you gotta keep your head up, oh. And you can let your head down, got my hands in my pockets, kicking these rocks. It's kind of hard to watch this life go by. I'm buying into skeptics. Skeptics mess with the confidence in my eyes. I'm seeing all the angles, thoughts get tangled. I start to compromise. My life and my purpose, is it all worth it? Am I gonna turn out fine? Oh, you turn out fine. Fine, oh.
gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, I know it's hard, no, it's hard to remember sometimes, but you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, only rainbows after rain, the sun will always come again, and it's a circle, circling around again, it comes around again. I say only rainbows after rain, the sun will always come again, and it's a circle, circling around again, it comes around, but you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, I know it's hard.
Show.